The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you guys had a great weekend. No Facebook Live today for all my Facebook and YouTube friends. The YouTube friends comes and goes because it's every time I talk about COVID, we get kicked off of YouTube. So on Facebook Live, YouTube, you can just listen to the show today for the live stream. I put those links up already because I'm live from BJU Seminary down here in beautiful Greenville, South Carolina. I was hoping Dr. Alan Benson's in the house. I was hoping it was going to be like South Carolina weather down here, but it's North Carolina weather. It's cold. Correct. So who do I talk to about that, Dr. Alan Benson?
I suggest you pray because that's the only place I can go to find any sort of resolution to that.
Yeah, I would suggest you pray, that coming from a seminarian. We're down here, for the last several weeks, and you've been hearing it on the show during the breaks, the CORE Conference down at BJU Seminary. Awake is the name of the CORE Conference, Proclaiming Truth to a Broken Culture. And this is something BJU Seminary has been doing for a while. It's directed at pastors. And why Awake this year, Alan? What was the whole point? Because there's a bunch of pastors, several hundred pastors in there today, and it's been great sitting in on the sessions. We're going to talk through Alan's session that he gave this morning, which was phenomenal. And there's a lot for us to glean from that. But what's the main point? I mean, this is, you got a seminary here that's for seminarians. You've got a university that's for students. But why pastors?
Well, I think part of it is, I think we know the terminology now a little bit of wokeism, or we're in a woke culture. And so, yes, there's a sense in which we're playing off that, and yet tying it into the truth where Paul writes to the church at Corinth, and he says, awake to righteousness. There's this, not just a mental, but I think a spiritual moment that we stop thinking about just what's going on around us, look through a spiritual lens, and see, in a sense, in the difficulties of the immediate, that by God's grace, there's a gospel opportunity.
Yeah.
And the word awake is wake up. Yes, it's dark, and yes, it's hard, and yes, it's challenging, and yes, things are being redefined, but there is a gospel opportunity that we need to look with fresh eyes at. So that's the awake.
Yep, and certainly that's the case today. This morning when you were sharing and giving your presentation, if it's in a room with a bunch of pastors and it's a theater, is it a presentation? Is it a talk? Is it a TED talk? Is it a sermon? What was that? What do we call that?
I preach. They can take it however they want.
You were definitely preaching. So you were talking about something that you're fascinated by tsunamis. I have the same issue. They fascinate me. And I think the reason they fascinate me, Alan, is because there's nothing you can do about it. So this thing's coming into your city, be it Indonesia or Japan, wherever it happens on the West Coast just recently. And the water's going to do what the water does. There's nothing you can do. You have no respite from it. There's no way to escape. You either run to high ground or you seek high ground where you're at. And you were talking about that this morning in terms of what's happened to our culture. And then you said something that's going to deeply offend most of my audience, which I really appreciate, which is less Fox News and more good news. So when we think about the tsunami, we're just talking about what's gone on in the culture, not only here, but around the world, right? Especially in the last 20 years.
That's correct. And we live with a relative view of things. So we in the West live with this view as though it's the way things have always been, and thus it's normal. And that relative view for us is a Judeo-Christian ethic. That this is just the way it is. The water will come and the water will go. But
right.
When it goes, these moorings are all still going to be here.
A sexual revolution came and went, and the little thing here and there, and what's going on in the movies. And then we have the Da Vinci Code. These things come and go. The water comes in, then the water goes out.
Right.
Right? No big deal.
And now many of us are sitting floundering because the water came in, and when it went out this time, many of the moorings that we thought would always be there somehow aren't there. Yeah. And it's left us wondering, where do we actually stand? And even as I talked in the illustration this morning, the camera that was filming the tsunami that gave us a sense of perspective is now adrift itself.
Yeah.
And there are many people, because we haven't firmly rooted ourselves in an actual biblical worldview, find ourselves adrift right now in the church. And in a sense, in the midst of the tsunami, there's this sense of hopelessness. And actually, that's where our opportunity is found, because there is hope. There is something that doesn't wash away right. in tsunamis of culture, and it's God's truth, and that's why proclaiming truth to a broken culture.
Yeah, and that's when you hit this hard, and as well you should, in terms of just proclaiming the gospel. So let's just look at the last 2 years. This has had an interesting impact here at BJU Seminary as well as the university. Your wife deals with this all the time in charge of kind of the health services here. It's COVID. COVID rolls in, so as a church, we decide we're going to talk about masks or not masks. Then we're going to talk about shutdown or not shutdown. Then we're going to talk about vax or not vax and natural immunity, and God gave us natural immunity. While the whole, that's, so there's this huge tsunami. We're caught up in it. But I don't hear as much preaching into the fear that gripped the nation and the world. And the only thing that's going to dispel that fear is Jesus Christ. So we're talking about all these cultural issues. And I'm not saying they're not important, because they are. But I think we miss the forest for the trees. And that's why this morning when you were preaching so forcefully, preaching Jesus, I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah, we haven't really done that in the last couple of years in the midst of this particular tsunami.
Exactly. The passage I was in this morning, 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul in that letter is writing to Timothy. You've got Timothy who's received his first letter, and Paul's saying, stay, I'm not going to come back when you thought I was going to be. In the second letter, he is saying, I don't think I'm coming back at all. So what should you be doing?
Yeah.
And Paul writes to him in that kind of a setting, and he says to him, remember Jesus Christ. It is such a poignant message that really is that central truth that isn't ever going to be swept away by any cultural
right.
tsunami. Remember Jesus Christ. And in doing that, it's not just have these fond memories about Jesus. It actually is the truth of the gospel anchored in the one and only Son of God and his redemptive work as the only hope for mankind. Not a vaccine,
yeah.
not a government, not an army, not a utopia. Remember Jesus Christ. And he points out that he is the one risen from the dead. Redemptive truth. And he is the seed of David. Everything that was needed for mankind prophesied in the Old Testament. He is the Messiah and fulfilled it all, accomplished yeah. the work. And so he's an anchor for us.
Yeah, well, the one name I didn't hear you mention there was Donald Trump, Alan. So I think your theology might be a little deficient.
I have read the Bible through every year for 25 years and haven't found his name.
All right, you mentioned Paul and young Timothy. I want to talk about that, pick that up when we come back. Because one question just about every pastor in America can't answer for you is who's coming after you. When you're done, when you die, when you retire, who's coming after you? We got to answer that question. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live from BJU Seminary down here in Greenville, South Carolina today, as well as BJU, the university itself, the core conference, which has been going on all day today and then again tomorrow. It's called Awake, Proclaiming Truth to a Broken Culture. And we're talking with Dr. Alan Benson, who's been on the show many, many times, and excited to be back with you, Alan. And following up on your message this morning, which was really, we're talking about a cultural tsunami. What do we do there in preaching Christ? Which I know, here's the challenge. I think a lot of people hear that, and we're like, yeah, of course. While at the same time, we're fighting the culture war. But we kind of miss the forest for the trees, and you want to change the culture, you want to change the government, you want to change what we think about life, you want to change the question of gender, whatever it is, whatever aspect of the culture where you want to get into. You think politically, you think in terms of getting the right people in place, let's change the school system. Yeah, most of the time we don't think of a changed mind is generally a result of a changed heart. My wife was pro-choice before we got saved. I was pro nothing. I didn't care. And then literally within weeks after we were both born again, this was back in 94, there was a visiting pastor to our church in Columbus, Ohio, who brought in a doctor to explain exactly what abortion was. And then my wife all of a sudden was awakened to the truth. I had enough from the Holy Spirit that, boom, she became a pro-life person. She's studying to be a sonographer right now. I mean, that's where she is today. And so that changed heart led to a changed mind, led to somebody that became pro-life and actively so. So the whole notion of preaching the gospel in the midst of this, when we're so frustrated with COVID and all the other stuff, this is a message I've been talking about since I got on the radio all the way back to 2007, that we missed the forest for the trees. So that was a big point this morning. And you mentioned less Fox News and more good news, which, hey, listen, if I spend as much time in prayer as I did on social media, I'd be changing the earth, I think. I think that would probably be true for most of us. Then another point, which I left off in the last segment, which is a really powerful point, that I'm going to challenge all of us today. When you see your pastor next, ask your pastor who's coming next. When your pastor retires, or God will, God forbid, they should die suddenly, who's going to take over the pulpit of that church? And they're probably going to point you to the church search committee. And you brought this up this morning. I know a huge ministry in the United States. I know the pastor personally. And when I asked some folks around him, what's the succession plan when the pastor's done, retires, or dies, whatever? And nobody had an answer. They didn't really think about it. You mentioned, of course, Paul and Timothy. What can we learn from that? And what's the challenge to pastors? Because I could tell in the room this morning, Alan, that there is a lot of conviction there, because I don't think most pastors know who's coming next.
Right. I agree. Steve, one of the colossal things that's happening while we're watching a crumbling culture is we're seeing, as you've heard before when you've had me on, that we're facing this colossal pastor shortage. It's been, I think, generational. And I think it is actually coming to fruition in the midst of these cataclysmic events. And actually, it's spurring it, because there are more pastors than ever that say, I don't want my church to close, but as soon as I see my way clear, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And most churches transition, if we can even use that word, in crisis. It's like, I'm the pastor, I'm pastor out, and good luck
right.
with that.
Right.
And part of it, I think, is born in the fact that we have this mindset to say, you know, I'm me, and I have my gifts, and I have my personality, I do things my way, and I don't ever want to superimpose that on the church.
Like, right.
I don't want to be the guy that picks your successor, and I appreciate that, but then we do nothing to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, more and more and more the norm that's happening, because we have good men that think, okay, I'm not a kingdom builder. I didn't build this kingdom, so I'm not going to find your next king. That's not the way I want this to work. But I think then we leave churches in crisis, in transition, and those don't typically go well. They either go years without any kind of leadership.
Right.
Or they make knee-jerk reactions, or you leave a leadership vacuum, and that gets filled in inappropriate ways. And so there's this challenge that in a sense, if we think through it, any of us, right, can only disciple into what we are. So we do believe.
Yeah, see, you have this innate ability to really upset my apple cart. Because you're when you said that this morning, you can only disciple somebody into where you are. That's the question where Paul would say, hey, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And I'm thinking in particular, you're a father, I'm a father of my four kids. If I can only disciple my children as far as I am.
Yeah.
And that didn't make me feel good, because I'm like, there's some major things that I need to work through as a follower of Jesus Christ. And I can't disciple my son any further than I'm already at. That was a really powerful point. So thank you again for ruining my life. I appreciate that.
Part of my existence.
But super helpful. But, you know, and you mentioned, I'm trying to remember, what's the stat with pastors? Is the pastors over 65 versus pastors under 40?
Yes, actually 70.
There's more under 40. There's more over 70 than there are under 40.
That's correct.
So the enemy's at the gate, speaking figuratively, coming over the gate. The tsunami is here, and we're drastically running out of men, godly men, that can help fight that fight via gospel proclamation. And so that's the whole thing you're talking about. And it made me think, Alan, that we're not – is it only talking about a pastor needs to – train another pastor, a Paul to Timothy, and that Timothy needs to take over his church, or just that Timothy needs to be a pastor somewhere? It's just you need to bring him up. You know what I mean? So are we
Correct.
Only talking about your own replacement, or we're talking about a pastor to serve in the kingdom, in whatever church that is?
Yeah, I think helping foster in young men what Timothy would have described by Paul as, if any man desires the office of a bishop, does anybody do anything to help someone see what the office of a bishop is that they might even desire it?
Right.
So Paul describes his relationship with Timothy in intimate terms. He said, you saw me. You knew my life. You knew my struggles. You knew my suffering. You knew my purpose in life. You knew the things that I did. There's a real intimate personal relationship whereby Paul intentionally exposed Timothy to his life so that Timothy would know what it is. And in a sense, that's what I'm describing. And I think in Western culture in particular, we've somehow detached ourselves somehow from that level of personal interaction so that young men might say, wow, like what you're doing, I understand it. And now that I understand it, I'm wondering whether God could use me to do that, whether it's here, successor, or just to pursue ministry.
Yeah.
I want us to think, if there are pastors who are listening today, I want us to think through this idea of what race am I running, right? Because we all run. Like, it's an exhausting work. It's a running work. And we're looking for a finish line, right? At some point.
Yeah, I want to break the tape and hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Right. But you brought up this morning, just for the sake of time, that forget about breaking the tape for yourself. Forget the tape and think about a baton.
Correct.
So what's the deal with that?
I think if we're running for a tape, we're running to an end of ministry, in a sense, whenever we should be running a relay race. Mm. That what I'm looking for is the next outstretched hand in which I can skillfully place the baton and really get them running in a race that now I can't run. Yeah. I can't go further down the track. I'm giving it to you to run. So I've done something in rightly handing the baton.
Yeah.
And that's the race that ministers need to focus on.
Yeah, and that's the question for every pastor. And that's the question we all need to be asking our pastors. Who are you going to hand the baton to? Maybe not necessarily to take over our local church, but to take over a church. Who are you walking along? Who are you bringing up? Alan, it's such a powerful point. By the way, all those resources, you can always check it out at our website, the special website for the radio show at BJU, seminary.bju.edu/radio. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you guys once again for all my Facebook Live and YouTube Live folks. We are not doing that today. You probably figured that out already, so hopefully you jumped over to the live stream or any of the stations that we're on. But live from our friends down here at BJU Seminary, as well as Bob Jones University here in Greenville, South Carolina. The CORE Conference, which we've been mentioning for probably about 6 weeks now, but it actually is happening today and tomorrow. Awake, proclaiming truth to a broken culture. Obviously, the need for that is massive, especially with pastors. And one of the things that somebody that's not a pastor, that was around several hundred pastors throughout the day today, to see them being able to get together. Most of the time, these guys operate in isolation. A lot of them don't really know each other. So just that opportunity for them to get together, pray together, and be encouraged and equipped is a big deal. So that's been a huge blessing being here today and just seeing that. Earlier today, a message by Dr. Christopher Cohn, who is the president and CEO of Agathon EDU Educational Group, which is also are you current president of Colorado Biblical University?
Yes.
So a busy guy. Pull your thing up just a little bit closer.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then, but that was a message. As soon as I saw that on there, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Cause you were talking about critical race theory and critical theory, so I want to do some basics here. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I think most people, Christopher, don't understand there's critical theory.
Right.
Then there's critical race theory.
Right.
Then there's intersectionality, which is a part of it. And then there's the damage that this is doing, especially down at the school level for children. So if we can popcorn through those things, because I want people to understand, like when, if I say, hey, there's actually some legitimate things to critical theory, people kind of lose their minds.
Let's think of it as a trickle-down thinking.
Okay, good.
Starts with critical race theory, which is essentially the idea of looking at systems to evaluate where racism is embedded. Okay. So, you know, maybe 30 something years of philosophical looks, especially at legal systems, but cultural systems, right? And then trickling down from that, you've got intersectionality, which adds gender to the mix and recognizes there's an intersection between race and gender. It's not enough to look at one or the other. You got to look at both.
Does it add sexual orientation as well?
Well, of course it does, because that's the new meaning of gender.
Right.
Gender isn't what it once was or was understood to be, right? So, yes, it includes all of that. And then you get the specific expressions of what those philosophies look like in the culture. And, you know, one of the examples I used in the session this morning is the Black Lives Matter movement,
yeah.
which is the statement is true. Black lives matter, of course, right? As do all lives. But it's built, that particular movement is built on a philosophy, and it's important to understand the philosophy.
So yeah, and that was the shocking thing about, you know, BLM, the movement, and BLM, Inc. And BLM, Inc., you mentioned this this morning in your session, where BLM, Inc., prior to the BLM protests, their website and their explanation, self-explanation of themselves, clearly Marxist, clearly radical sexualization, get the dad out of the house, promotion of all sexual orientations other than heterosexuality, heteronormative stuff was a problem. And then they scrubbed all that once everybody started to go check out the BLM website. And then the other thing about intersectionality, because I want to make sure people understand this. So there's oppression against African-Americans. That's one thing. Oppression against an African-American woman. Okay, now you're doubling down, because not only is she oppressed as an African-American, she's oppressed as a female, right? Now, if she's an African-American female and a lesbian, that's a whole nother level, right? So all these different things, and then they end up with a hierarchy. So a white male's at the top. You're at the top. I'm at the top, white male. At the bottom, you know, if you've got a African-American female lesbian Muslim, for example, well, they're getting piled on by everybody. Is that kind of how they look at it?
You know, I don't know about the quantification, but that's pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, and I like to tell people I'm as white as Barack Obama, and that's a good conversation starter.
But, yeah, I would imagine it is.
but you know, the bottom line is Jesus died for every person.
Right.
And that's the message we need to be communicating. It doesn't mean we ignore injustice. Justice is very important to God.
Yeah.
So being active and aware of what's happening, and responding to what Jesus told us to do, which is love God and then love each other. You know, it's kind of the fulfillment of the law.
Well, and you're mentioning that four-letter word, love, and I think that's something we missed out on. Now, I teach Christian ethics to high school-age homeschoolers as well as U.S. history and civics, so I have about 110 students every week right now. One of the things I try to impart to them, even if you look at BLM, critical theory, critical race theory, there's aspects of it that, as a gospel person, there should be a love that wells up inside of me that where I can build a bridge instead of burning one down and going, listen, I'm with you on oppression. I'm with you on systems that are oppressing certain individuals based on their skin or their sex, whatever the case may be. And we should lament over that. I think we miss a huge opportunity, Christopher, to kind of identify with them, of course, from a Christian perspective. But that issue of love, that showed up a lot in your session this morning. I don't know that we catch that very well.
You know, Paul tells Timothy in his first letter, the goal of our instruction is love, 1 Timothy 1:5. So critical. The whole point of all this instruction, he's telling Timothy, be faithful, be true to the sound doctrine. And oh, by the way, the point of it all is love. And if we miss that, then we're doing something else. We're not teaching well, right? We're missing the instruction. And so it really needs to show up as we're interacting with others. And I think of Galatians 6, 9, and 10, when Paul says, as you have opportunity, do good to all people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all people. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 2, 17, I think it is, he says, honor all people.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got a responsibility, and it doesn't mean that we have to essentially bow down to the
right.
agenda
right.
or confess that this philosophy is correct. That's not at all the issue. Jesus didn't subject himself to the philosophies of the day, but he still demonstrated love and taught love,
yeah.
and so we have responsibility with that.
Isn't there, and one of the things that we keep talking about on Theology Thursdays with BJU Seminary, is this incredible gospel opportunity that we have right now. To me, critical theory, critical race theory, just screams gospel opportunity.
Because
they're going to try to change systems, and they're going to try to change the government. Let's get the right people in the White House, and let's get the dad out of the nuclear family, and we're going to do all these things. But we know, as followers of Christ, we actually do have the answer. Do we kind of miss out on that?
Oh, I think it's huge. You know, think about the football verse, the verse most people are somewhat familiar with, right? John 3:16, and it leads with God loved the world, right? He loved the world so much that he did this. Well, here we have a culture and a society, and they're screaming out at the top of their lungs, my life matters.
Yeah.
And I just, it's heartbreaking when you think about that someone is in such a state that they feel like they have to say that
right.
because they're not recognized.
That should be a self-evident truth.
It should be. It's not. And
right.
And there's reasons for that,
yeah.
you know, horrific reasons, but for us as those who are representing Christ to be able to not just speak, but demonstrate that God indeed did love the entire world and Jesus did indeed die for you, and to demonstrate that we value people at that level and that we care for them. That's our responsibility. We're it's part of the Christian life, and so if we're not demonstrating that, we're just not doing it right.
Is CRT? I already know the answer to the question, but CRT is a danger to the church, because it seems like a lot of churches, especially younger pastors, are trying to find out a way to embrace it, and it doesn't seem to me like they actually understand it.
You know, something that's been said in this conference, the other sessions have been fantastic, and in some of the other interviews and discussions you've had, is essentially the caution against focusing so much on the cultural issue that we're trying to tailor the message to every cultural moment. We've got to be really careful about that, because we can spend so much time chasing rabbits that we're not teaching the Word of God. Mm-hmm. We've got to focus on the Word, because that's unchanging, right? I am reminded of Acts 17 when Paul is engaging with Athens and he goes into this culture and they're worshiping all kinds of gods, and he finds their weakness, their intellectual weakness. They recognize that they don't know everything, so they have to the unknown God. And so Paul doesn't correct them. He just goes right to that weak point, and he begins to tell them the truth. And I think we can do that without critiquing and getting into judgment.
What about social justice?
We've got
a minute and a half left, and I ask you about social justice.
I look forward to when Jesus establishes.
And I'll have you back on. We'll spend an appropriate amount of time on this in the future. But
all right, you heard it. He made the promise.
Oh, yeah. Count on that.
Jesus will establish justice when he comes in his kingdom. In the meantime, we are representing him on earth, and we've got a responsibility to walk humbly before our God and be just.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, these things come out, and if you have a robust worldview, I'm looking at the argument about critical race theory or social justice, and I'm like the kid in the back of the class saying, hey, I'm down with that.
Yep.
I'm not down 100% with that, but I'm after the same thing that you're after. I'm just going to take a different way of getting there.
Exactly.
Instead, and so we immediately just go ballistic, and we go to war. We go to culture war, as opposed to going, you know what, this is an incredible gospel opportunity.
Indeed.
Because isn't that supposed to be our ultimate goal?
To sit across the table for someone, tell them that you love them, show them that Christ loves them, is rich. It's a beautiful opportunity.
Yeah, and I think that's where we identify politically in a lot of things with the right, not as much with the left, but we are supposed to be people of the way, which is different. We actually are the third party. And I think we miss that. I say this all the time, Christopher. I say, listen, I most of the people I've known for years, people that love the Lord, love America, they're engaged, they care more about saving the nation, about saving America, than they do about seeing Americans saved.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. We'll definitely do this again. It was an awesome session. Christopher, it's great to meet you. But I'll have you back on when we can actually spend an appropriate amount of time on this stuff. This is just the tip of the iceberg, everybody. Christopher, thank you so much for being
here.
Sounds
great. Thank you.
We'll do it again. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, live from BJU Seminary. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live from Greenville, South Carolina, down here at BJU Seminary for the Awake Conference, Proclaiming Truth to a Broken Culture, the core conference. And just great to be here and be around all these pastors and the BJU Seminary staff, as well as university students running around. The place is always alive and pointing everybody to a deeper walk with Christ, and then to go out and lead. Okay, you don't just get educated. You got to do something with that. And that's the purpose today of the Awake Conference, for pastors that are coming here to be encouraged, also to connect. I mentioned this earlier, and unless you start to meet a bunch of pastors, you don't realize that most of them live pretty isolated lives, even in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I'm from. And I know, gosh, I've probably worked with 150 churches there. Most of them don't know each other. And so when you have an opportunity to get together with other pastors, it's a big deal. That's why I've been encouraging you to tell your pastor about it and get other pastors involved. So that's been really cool to see that happening today. And then on the show, we're just kind of doing a little potpourri. We're just sampling from all the things that God has available for us here, which is why we're so excited to do Theology Thursday every week. Dr. Ken Casillas is here with us now. He's the editor of the Journal of Biblical Theology and Worldview, which, by the way, we point to a lot on the page that we have our friends set up at BJU Seminary. So that's seminary.bju.edu/radio. Okay, I point you guys to that every week, so get that one in your heads. Seminary.bju.edu/radio. Okay, Ken, what's the deal with your last name?
So I am of Hispanic origin. My dad was from Puerto Rico.
And were you born down there?
I was. That's right.
And then when did you come up here to Crazy America?
I came in 1987 to be a freshman at Bob Jones University.
And so give me the difference, basically, between Central America and this place. How do you see the differences?
Oh, wow.
Either spiritually, culturally, however you want to do it.
The food's a lot better down there.
Yes, amen.
Course.
But do they have Chick-fil-A?
Actually, in Puerto Rico, they just got their first one. So that's an improvement.
So now they're blessable. Okay, all right, good. Yeah, because they have Jesus chicken. All right.
Yeah.
So the food's a big difference. What about spiritually? What's it like down there?
Well, I think you'd find among God's people just a real warmth and zeal about worship and about serving the Lord that, you know, may or may not be as evident sometimes here in the States.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little more exuberant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to Thailand on mission work. I've been to Africa, a few different places. That's what I discovered there. They're a little bit more free with their worship. And then I've also been to Northern Iraq, and nothing was very free because they don't know how to worship. That's the really sad thing about Islam. But tell us about the Journal for Biblical Theology and Worldview and what you do here at the seminary, because that's one of the great things about partnering with BJU Seminary is you guys are really doing a great job on thought leadership and trying to get not only pastors but the general public to get a little bit deeper with theology and with their faith so that we can have an impact, number one, for the gospel. Number two, for just the good of the culture. But tell us a little bit about the journal and what your role is here.
Well, I think that the title of it says it pretty well, that there are two aspects. There's biblical theology and then there's worldview. And those two things are very integrated, but they are two different emphases. So biblical theology speaks to, we want to look very closely and carefully at the actual data of Scripture and reflect as accurately as possible the theological truths that we can establish for sure, which is a little different from other kinds of theology that are making a lot of inferences or speculating. So our basis is the explicit teaching of Scripture.
Yeah.
And with that, trying to keep it connected to the overall storyline of the Bible and how it unfolds progressively. So you'll find some articles that are heavy on that side, that take some topic and are looking at all the occurrences of it in Scripture, trying to exegete these passages, trying to tie it all together, and trying to get at the essence of what the Bible teaches. The worldview piece is tied into those. Some are more emphasizing that area than others, but that gets to application. When we have all these pieces on whatever topic, and we've done all this legwork, the world is filled with needs. We have issues that we have to contend with. We have application we need to make. And so that's what the worldview part is addressing.
Yeah, because the theological side, and I've certainly discovered this in all my years of doing what I do, it's like a compass. And I used to fly when I was in college. And if your directions are off just a little bit, in a short distance, it's not that big a deal. But the further out you travel, the more off you become.
Right,
that's why
a
compass is such a big deal. Yeah. So theological training, because if your theology is off, if you don't have a firm foundation, your worldview is going to be skewed, which is why we see a lot of people that will claim Christianity and then they come up with positions from a worldview perspective. You're sitting there going, wait a second, that's not even biblical. Like I can bap, like Pete Buttigieg. Let me just use him as an example. So he's in the federal government, obviously. Pete Buttigieg claims to be a Christian. And his definition of life is based on personhood. Personhood based on when God breathed into Adam the breath of life, Adam became a living person. So Pete Buttigieg doesn't believe that a child is a child until it's breathing air. Mm. Now, I would like to ask him if he would be willing to apply that concept to his own child, because he and his quote-unquote husband have a little baby. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but 20 minutes before that baby was born, according to Pete's perspective, his worldview, based on deeply flawed theology, was it would have been all right for me to whack that child because it wasn't a human. And so that's what I really appreciate about the journal is theology drives worldview. And if your theology is off even just a little bit, your worldview is going to get just messed up. Isn't that the deal?
Right. Yeah, for sure. We have started to get into some of these kind of cultural topics. So, for example, about a year ago, I did a paper in there on the Bible's teaching, the Old Testament's teaching on justice in society. So it kind of speaks to the segment you just did with Chris Cohen, where, you know, we've got all of these ideas out here. Some believers are buying into these secular theories and slapping a Bible verse on it that may or may not have anything to do with the actual position that they're taking. So I said, let's go back to ground zero and try to build some kind of unified picture of what the Bible actually says about God's thinking regarding justice in society. And so if we don't have that basis, then it's just like, what is the latest theory to guide us?
Yeah, and that we had Jim Berg on the show not that long ago talking about one of the articles in the journal, which was Theological Foundations for Counseling Addicted Believers. And for a lot of people, that's an oxymoron. How can a believer possibly be addicted to anybody or to anything? To which I would say, well, name me a believer that's not a human being. Well, okay, now that I just put everything on the table by acknowledging the fact that believers are human. And that's why this is such an important thing. Like with theology versus worldview, I get excited about the collapse of Western civilization from a gospel perspective because, like we were talking with Christopher, whether we're talking about critical race theory or just the notion of justice. Tim Keller once in a sermon said, if you're not doing something regularly to help the oppressed or to help the poor, I would question whether you're a Christian at all. Because justice is such a big deal in both the Old and the New Testament. Do you think we have a massive problem, Ken, with most Christians just have a really weak theology? Therefore, they don't even hardly have an operational worldview.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that so much of what's gone on in the church, and nothing against this, obviously, but has been just about getting people to understand the basics of the gospel and to come to Christ. And then some very, you know, just foundational issues about discipleship. But in terms of these broader questions of the world that we live in and how to make decisions and how to discern these movements and everything, the church, we have tended to shy away from that for whatever reason because of our emphasis on personal holiness and that sort of thing. Worldview speaks to bigger issues, that we live in God's world, and we don't want to segment or compartmentalize our lives like, this is my walk with God, this is what I do on Sunday, and over here, what happens in the work week in relation to society, in relation to government, that's like a separate issue. We don't often help people connect the dots between the two.
Yeah, and then I think a lot of us are still drinking milk as opposed to eating meat.
Right.
Who would you say is the Journal of Biblical Theology and Worldview? Who's it for? Because I think you come in here, and I watch. I'll just do this, and I'm going to trigger a bunch of people, and their eyes are going to glaze over, right? So I mentioned Theological Foundations for Counseling Addicted Believers. Here's one. Bruising, crushing, or striking, the translation we're talking in the Hebrew, of the promise of victory in Genesis 3:15. Here's another one. The futurist interpretation of Revelation, intertextual evidence from the prologue. Nobody understands what that means. Right. So who should be reading stuff like this? Because I know we have to, and this is something for all of us in the audience, to send these links to our pastors, because our pastors need to be in here.
Right.
But does the average Christian in the pew, should we be trying to go a little deeper like these articles in the journal?
Well, I would say the main audience is pastors
or
seminary students or people that have had seminary training. So at least some of the articles are more technical in terms of the language. But really our understanding of Scripture ultimately depends on some people being able to go into that depth.
Yeah.
Even our having a Bible in the first place, the average person probably doesn't give a thought to how we have this so clearly in our language. Somebody had to do the technical legwork to understand the original, to understand how best to convey that in English. So the church relies on scholars, even if not every individual Christian is going to get into that. But I would say that there are a number of our articles that, you know, a generally informed layperson could pick up and that are immediately relevant. There's kind of a range. Some of them are more in-depth and are giving that foundation to the people that are more devoted to that kind of study, especially for when controversies might arise down the road regarding some of these subjects.
Yeah.
But others are more focused on the worldview side and directed to the application right away.
Oh, cool. All right. So all these links, again, I'll take you back to the website because all these articles are linked, including Ken's article. So if you just go to seminary.bju.edu/radio, I'll jump on Facebook here in a couple minutes and put that up. And then challenge yourself. Make these available to your pastor. Share these links with your pastor and encourage him to go check these out. And you can sign up, by the way. You can sign up to get the journal of biblical theology. So in Worldview, you can sign up. It's right there on the homepage. And you can check out the articles for yourself, but also share them with your pastor. pastor, because we need to help continue to encourage and equip our pastors. So when you find out about these things, take advantage of it and share it with your pastor. Ken, it was great having you on. Thanks for spending a few minutes. We'll do it again.
Appreciate it.
This is Steve Noble live from BJU Seminary down here in Greenville, South Carolina. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.